often say that wherever I go, I create urban sprawl, so that's a little bit of what's happening here. Getting out my timer. And my pointer. Okay, there we go. Nonconformity. Well, maybe let me say, kind of in the spirit of nonconformity, this is a little preface that I often give when I'm asked to preach. Even though I've spent like almost all of my adult life in seminaries, I've never taken a preaching class. So, because I didn't get an MDiv. I have my degree. From AMBS and peace studies. And so I've often admonished the deans ever since I graduated that they need to make everybody take a preaching class who goes to seminary because, okay, thank you. Because no matter how many times I told people, well, I'm a peace studies person. All they hear was I went to seminary and asked me to preach. At Fellowship of Hope, we tend to not talk about the preaching as preaching or delivering sermons, but it's a time of teaching. And so I like that phrase because it sort of fits a little bit more with my style of how I bring content. So when I preach, I think of myself as teaching. This is not lecturing, because the task of the preacher is to share the gospel. Although I also try to share the gospel when I lecture. But lecturing is not as interactive as what this sermon is and this time of teaching is going to be. Nonconformity is probably one of my favorite topics. We're going to start here with a little quick word association. I say nonconformity. You say? Ellen, did you say oranges? Okay. Somebody else said something. Randy, what did you say?
Uncapitalized.
Amish and Old Order Mennonite.
There we go.
Romans 12.
Peace.
Sticking out.
Jesus.
One of these things is not like the others. Can you tell which one? Can you tell which one of us is doing their own thing? From Sesame Street. How many of you here wore plain coats? Anybody? Wow. Any coverings? Okay. So those of you who used to wear coverings, why did you take them off?
Irrelevant.
Okay. Irrelevant. What?
I lost it.
Carla lost hers. That's a sermon in and of its own right. Rose, how about you?
Change churches.
Yeah, Jewel.
I changed my mind.
Okay.
Nobody else was my age.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother died.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I never really wanted to put it on in the first place.
Uh-huh. Nonconformity. Hope. How are we going to get from nonconformity to hope? Well, it's going to be a circle, is how we're going to get there. There are some folks here from Benton Mennonite Church who know how much I love Circle. Right? And I hope that they are learning to love Circle too. I, along with some colleagues and other friends, I've been trained in an approach to Circle process that's called the Circle Way. And the Circle Way isn't just about sitting in a circle and passing a talking stick and talking about your feelings. The Circle Way is interested in bringing together a couple of different archetypes of group process is the language that they use. And some of what that means is, well, okay, this is not a sermon about circle process. Let me back up. My circle today has three important points on the rim: jackets, thermostats, and compost. And what I'm going to do now here is talk about how these things, at least in my mind, and I hope hopefully in yours as well, are interconnected, how they relate to Paul's letter to the Romans, how they relate to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and what all that has to do with nonconformity. So one of the things that I do as a theologian is I use a kind of theological method. I mean, that's just fancy pants talks for like how you choose your ingredients and put it together in a bowl and turn it into something edible. I use a methodology. It's called reconstruction. So that is, I'm a reconstructive peace theologian. Now, one of the things we know that human beings, like other creatures, need to survive is shelter, right? And so we construct shelters for ourselves, right? How many of you live in a house? Yeah? Okay. Here, if we didn't have these facilities, we would have been out in the kind of cold and rain last night, right? There were some brave folks among us who were tenting, right? So even they needed a form of shelter. So a shelter, a house, a retreat center is a construction, right? Something you build. Something similar happens when we do theology. We construct doctrine. We construct confessions of faith. We put things together to give us a place to live our lives as Christians. Now, sometimes we find that the house that we originally built or the shelter we originally built doesn't accommodate us because maybe our family has grown, right? Or maybe if you're an empty nester, how many empty nesters here have downsized or are considering downsizing? Why do you want to downsize? Saves you money. You don't need the space. It's excessive. It's easier to take care of. So downsizing is a kind of reconstructing. That is, it's reassessing your needs and adapting, changing your life a bit, your lifestyle, to your new stage of life. There are also times when we maybe move into a fixer-upper and you need to do some renovation. Or maybe you didn't know that you moved into a fixer-upper and it becomes apparent that you need to do some renovation. This is also a form of reconstruction. So going back to this little interactive conversation we were having about coverings, part of what we need to do, or we get to do, with this doctrine, this teaching of nonconformity, is reconstruct it. Because it used to mean looking a certain way, right, among old Mennonite congregations, to be set apart, right? But if you notice, what I love about Eugene Peterson's version of the Romans 12:2 passage is, like, nonconformity wasn't anywhere in there. Did you catch what word he used to mean nonconformity? What?
Don't become so well adjusted.
Be mature. It's about maturity. Nonconformity is about maturity, right? And conformity is about immaturity. So another part of what happens in this kind of reconstructive process of theology is when we take time to reflect on the tradition that we've received from our forebears, and we pay attention to the life that we're living, and we ask what kind of faith we want to share with the next generation. We engage in this process of reflection, reconstruction. What kind of house do we want them to live in? What kind of house do we live in, do we want to live in? Right? How many of you live in the house that you were born in? Or that your parents were born in? Anybody? Okay, a few, right? And you know that over time, you can't just live in the house the way it was originally built, right? The wiring needs to be updated to be up to code and some of these kinds of things. But the other part of it is that most of us don't live in the houses that our parents own, right? We moved out. We set up our own homes. Again, this is all part of this kind of constructive, reconstructive, theological reflection process that helps us become mature Christians, right? Being in this place where we are interacting with the tradition that we received, making it our own, and tending it and caring for it so that as we pass it on to the next generation, it brings life. It's compost, right? So another thing about where I live in South Central Elkhart, it's in city limits, and we have a flock of 5 chickens. It's against the law to keep chickens in where we live, but we do it anyway. And part of, there are lots of reasons why we keep chickens. It's an act of civil disobedience because we think that not being able to keep chickens in city limits is an unjust law. We keep chickens because my husband grew up on a farm, didn't want to be a farmer, but this is one way he can stay connected with that heritage and pass it on to our children. We're picky about the food we eat, and organic eggs can be expensive at the supermarket, so we have our own supply. But because of all this illegal activity that we have going on in our backyard, we have to kind of camouflage it. So our chicken run, much to my chagrin, because I would like one of those really fancy pants chicken coops that I'm sure there are tons of Pinterest boards with all of them. I don't indulge myself by looking at those. Actually, my favorite one is there's a hobbit hole. There's a chicken coop. But my husband says, no, our chicken run is our compost heap. Okay? And if you were to come to our backyard, take a look at this compost pile / chicken run, you would notice that it needs to be turned. We've kind of fallen into the status quo where it's just a bunch of leaves and kitchen scraps and chicken droppings that are all just kind of stacking up and piling up, and it's all pretty firm. Which if you know anything about compost, you want compost to sort of fall apart in your hands. Well, so the main reason we haven't gotten in there to turn our compost heap is because we don't have time. It's a small kind of confined space, and it's a lot of work. The status quo is just a little bit easier to work with. This is another part of this, going back to this kind of reconstruction thing. A lot of us tend to receive the faith that we've been offered, and then we want to pass it on like a baton at a relay, right? We're running the good race. The challenge with that is that when you do this kind of transmission, what if someone says, oh, no, thank you. But here, take it. It's the baton that I'm giving you. No, thank you. You need to take this baton. It's really important. No, thank you. Take the baton. Why? We lose our saltiness, our persuasiveness. We fail to transmit the winsomeness of the gospel, right? So we need to get in there and turn the compost heap. We need to help be agents of transformation, both our own, that is overcoming our resistance to getting in there and turning over the compost heap. Because this also goes back to the way Peterson has rendered this passage from Romans. It's not about our own work, right? There is grace infused here. We receive the tradition and we pass it on as acts of grace received from God. This isn't about our faithfulness in receiving what we've been given and our faithfulness in passing it on. There needs to be something more alive here. This is also where the compost comes in, right? There's something very, part of the reason why we have to get in there and turn the compost heap is because there are microorganisms in there that need to be able to move around freely to get in there and decompose this stuff, to turn it back into life. And if we just let it sit there, we are actually standing in the way of this transformation that's waiting to happen to nourish our garden, right? So nonconformity has to do with compost because nonconformity involves breaking up some of our own well-established habits and patterns. It's not just about saying the culture out there is bad and is a problem and we need to stand in contrast to it, although that is an important part of this. But then what happens if we build this wall too high, saying the culture out there is the problem? We then stop paying attention to the culture inside the church, the culture inside our families, inside our congregations, that is kind of like the compost heap in my backyard. Right? So nonconformity keeps us on our toes. It invites us to assess what kind of theological houses we are living in and what kinds of shelters we have built for ourselves. And I think this is one of the challenges of, I'm a denominationalist, I'm a church junkie, and I am pro-institution. Oh, can I get an amen? But part of what I've been having to realize, and it is painful, painful, brothers and sisters, is that maybe all of the love and the time and the energy and the money that went into building these shelters was, well, we have to do it differently. We can't live in these shelters anymore in the same way. For lots of different, like metaphorically and literally, right? Amen. So this breaks my heart, but it also inspires me to try to figure out how to be more mature, because the child in me wants to kick and scream and throw tantrums and say, that's not true, you're not telling the truth, no, I want to resist. So the invitation here for me is to become mature, to pay attention to what is so, and seek the renewal of the earth, seek the renewal of God's people, and believe that God's vision for our life together is bigger than what we currently can imagine. So there's a kind of non-conforming to my own habituated pattern of wanting to tell the grown-ups no. Okay, and I have a 2-year-old who's gotten very good at saying no. And she even goes pew, 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 pew. That's her little gun shooting at me if she doesn't like what I'm telling her. And I think, wow, where did she get that? She didn't get it from me. She didn't get it from her father, she did not get it. She got it from her brother. Well, where did he get it from? Not from us. So there's a level at which, however much I want to think I have sealed my children off from this culture out there, right? We are swimming in it. We are interacting with it because we have made choices to take off coverings and plain coats. So this requires a different and more intense level of maturity from us than perhaps we imagined or were prepared or have been prepared for or prepare ourselves for. Amen. Amen. So the jackets and the compost. What about the thermostat? When I worked on my doctoral dissertation, one of the figures that I worked with, because that's what you do in a dissertation. You find a bunch of people with big ideas, and then you compare and contrast them and try to say something new, was Martin Luther King Jr. And another person who was in my dissertation was Doris Jansen Longacre, okay? More with less and living more with less. And I put them in conversation also with Reinhold Niebuhr, but that's another conversation for another time, because I, the three of them together helped me think differently about nonconformity. I had received, like maybe many of you, this idea that nonconformity is about us Mennonites setting ourselves apart from other people, from other Christians, because, well, I wasn't always quite sure why. Probably the thing I picked up by osmosis. I never heard any sermons at Berkey Avenue or Belmont, and I haven't heard any sermons like this at Fellowship of Hope. No one said, we are like the way we are because everybody else is wrong, has fallen away. Like, you know, we've made it through the narrow gate on the narrow path. But that was kind of what I thought. I mean, not in a judgmental, violent way, but that's, like, it's just kind of true, right? So one of the things that this also meant was that I thought we were the only ones who cared about Romans 12:2. I didn't think about this actually mattering to other Christians. So Reinhold Niebuhr and Martin King helped me realize that actually there are lots of Christians who care about the same kind of motto, this verse that becomes a motto. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind caught my attention in ways, as I entered into this kind of ecumenical conversation, in ways I wasn't expecting. And it helped me find my way to Doris Jansen Longacre, who was reconstructing, in More with Less, this Mennonite teaching about nonconformity, putting it in a new context, opening it up, turning the heap of compost. And it was in this research that I discovered Martin King's use of the metaphor of the thermostat in relationship to nonconformity. So the way he uses this idea of the thermostat, he contrasts it to a thermometer. So a thermometer, of course, measures temperature. A thermostat changes the temperature. His interpretation of Romans 12:2 goes something like this. And this comes from a sermon that he first preached in the 1950s. And he continued to kind of come back and circle back around to the image, to the metaphor, on into the 60s. That as Christians, part of our job, our role in society, is not to be thermometers, that is, reflect the temperature of the world around us, but to be agents of change and adjust the temperature when it needs to be adjusted. Now, we want to be careful that we don't just, you know, turn the thermostat up too high, because if we do that, we will probably end up doing what the young children in my house do, which is when it's too hot, they take off all their clothes, and then we would really be naked Anabaptists. I got too much modesty for that, friends. Because we understand, like, one way to reconstruct this idea of the jackets and the coverings is we recognize that what we wear, literally and figuratively, matters. How we clothe ourselves with the Spirit matters, right? It impacts how others see us and how others perceive us, what they notice about us, right? So being a thermostat is something that requires discernment. There are times when we might choose a more radical expression of nonconformity. And I would say in those moments when we choose a more radical form of nonconformity, that's like turning the thermostat up really high or turning it down way down low because we're trying to get some people's attention. But we don't want to leave the thermostat there, right? Once we have people's attention, what I want to suggest this morning is that perhaps as minders and tenders of church institutions, our invitation is to find small compassion-filled ways to reflect this maturity that God calls us to live out as Christians, They're gentle things. It's like being light and salt. We know that it's gentle, but it can have a huge impact, right? Martin King, also in this sermon where he talks about the thermostat, talks about the fact that what our society needs are a lot of what people consider maladjusted, creative Christians. people who are just a little bit out of step, out of sync, out of temperature with the society around them. This goes back to Henry David Thoreau, Walden Pond, and marching to a beat of a different drummer kind of thing, right? These are things that I think, yes, I say yes to that. But then I also have to reflect on the ways that I tend to say no to it all the time. So part of the invitation, I think, of the passage, both from Matthew and from Romans, is for me to ask, what are the small ways, what are the small habits I can build into my life that help ease the work of turning the compost,
Amen. Amen.
That help my body perceive changes in temperature that I need to respond to as a Christian person by changing the thermostat? And how do I clothe myself with the Spirit in a way that invites other people into what I'm doing, persuades them, makes them curious about my life, invests them somehow in this compost business? I could go on and on and on, but my stopwatch tells me it is time to stop. And, oh, I see the clock back there. It's really time to stop. As George and I were working on the service this morning, I knew one of the things I wanted to do was give people opportunity to respond with ritual action in some way to some of these ideas that I've been sharing and the other ideas and expressions of the gospel that you have heard so far beginning yesterday afternoon. And so on the table here, is it okay if I just go into explaining all this, George?
Okay, go ahead.
There are, and this is where we link to the hope, through prayer, through creativity, through acts of compassion like lighting a candle, through reminding ourselves what salt tastes like. These become ways, ritual actions that help us welcome others into our circle. So we're going to sing some songs. And if you're curious, come up to the table and you can grab some pipe cleaners and perhaps form them into something that symbolizes the gospel of nonconformity to you. There are some bowls of salt, sea salt, some from the Mediterranean, some from the Himalayas. Taste it. Remind yourself of what saltiness is. There are candles. You can light them as a sign of hope, a practice of hope. And there are also cards with instructions for how to pray Julian of Norwich's body prayer. Given how much time or how little time there is, let me ask the group, I'm practicing circle here. Would you like the opportunity to, how much time would you like the opportunity to engage some of these ritual actions? Do you want to finish worship at 9:35? Or are you okay with finishing worship at 9:45.
Is it okay to ask questions or make comments?
I'm sorry, Dick, no. we can do that during the break and at lunch and in the afternoon. This is a time for you to engage quietly, open your inward ear, and find what you need to fan the flame. right?
Now, does he mean by what's on the table?
Oh, were you asking about logistic questions or were you asking about my content?
Content.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. But 9:45, are people okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, we will sing. I will be over here to offer some instruction if you need it.